Europe looks to make one final push to rein in big tech with a new competition law. From London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. In the new year, the EU is expected to continue hammering out final details of its Digital Markets Act and Digital Services Act. Both are considered landmark pieces of legislation aimed at protecting consumers and keeping tech giants like Amazon, Google, and Facebook in check. Dr. Andy Yen is the founder and CEO of Proton, a company that's offered alternatives to traditional big tech platforms. He says this legislation will go a long way to leveling the industry's playing field for sector-specific and regional players.
Today, if we look at the world's largest tech businesses, they're predominantly American and they're Chinese, which means the value that's being created and also the high-paying jobs that comes along with that value are predominantly going to the U.S. and also to China. So Europe has two choices: to pass legislation to defend its digital actors and create tech giants of its own that can compete on a global scale, or it can watch millions of high-paying jobs and trillions of euros literally flow overseas over the next decade. Given this choice, it's pretty clear what European policymakers should be doing.
Yeah, it might be clear what they should be doing and what they're trying to do, but it seems that at least this year, there have been a lot of setbacks to this legislation. Do you think that it will get over the finish line in 2022?
The fact that it's taking longer than expected is actually because European legislators and policymakers are taking a bit extra time to get it right. This is really a landmark legislation that will regulate the internet for the next two decades. The wrong legislation can be worse than no legislation. And I'm fairly optimistic that next year we will see the DMA finally being passed.
How much, though, do you think this is down to also more local regulation or country-by-country regulation? You know, we were in Germany this fall talking to a bunch of tech companies who feel like their country isn't doing enough to protect homegrown innovation and companies' ability to expand and grow there and compete globally. So how much is it sort of a European-wide regulation that's needed versus country-by-country specific legislation?
It really needs to be something that is unified and consistent across Europe to really have the effect that we need it to have, and to also make it possible for European companies to tap into the scale that already exists today in Europe. There's around 500 million people if you consider, you know, greater Europe, and that's a sizable market we can take advantage of to really scale our businesses.
Andy Yen, thank you so much for breaking this down for us.
Thank you for having me.
Checking the numbers now, tech shares have performed about as well as the broader market this year. The broad S&P 500 index is up about 26%. The MSCI World Tech Shares Index is up 25%. Many companies have been beneficiaries of the pandemic work-from-home trend, but some have bucked the trend. Zoom, for example, is down 45% year-to-date. One other number for you, 65%. That's how much Bitcoin has rallied this year. It's not just the popular cryptocurrency, but lots of other digital currencies that have boomed over the last 360-something days. There's arguably never been a better time to mine for crypto, with new ones popping up all over the world. But it's an industry ripe for scamming, as the BBC's James Clayton reports.
I thought I could make some quick money. The entire episode is now haunting me, actually.
This is Chiranjeevi. He's telling me about five traumatic days in his life when he became the victim of a cryptocurrency scam, losing his life savings.
I was so stressed because, you know, I took out the entire family emergency money and nobody knows about it.
Chiranjeevi messaged me out of the blue, telling me what had happened. He wasn't just telling me about the deception, though. He was warning me, because central to the scam was a distorted version of my reporting.
What's happening here is part of a modern day gold rush, but they're not mining minerals here, they're mining Bitcoin.
Earlier this year, I was given access to a Bitcoin mine in New York State. I made a report about it, focused on how mining Bitcoin produces carbon emissions.
Both generates electricity and...
There are fortunes to be made mining cryptocurrency, and that's what the scammers manipulated. They edited the report to suggest that I was endorsing their fake Bitcoin mine. They then started up a group on the social media platform Telegram saying they'd mine crypto for cash. At first, the victims got a return on their investment. Chiranjeevi got $40 back on his initial $160 investment.
Actually, he's very genuine, is what I thought when he sent back me those coins.
But then problems with the mining and more money needed to fix them. Chiranjeevi took screen grabs of the exchange he had with the group. This was one interaction. The scammer is played by an actor.
This requires the transfer immediately, so that mining can continue, mate.
When he was putting me under time pressure, I was really panicked. The reason I panicked was I was almost invested, you know, close to $2,000. And he was sort of putting me pressure, time pressure on me and asking me to invest more so that I get more returns.
Chiranjeevi ended up asking his friends and family for more money. He lost it all.
This scam uses many of the psychological cues that we see in social engineering.
And this is Jessica Barker. She's an expert in online scams and wrote a book called Confident Cybersecurity.
We see the scammers taking advantage of sunk cost fallacy. So the targets have already given a certain amount of money and they're pressured into feeling like, well, you're this far in, you need to give more.
The scammers had always said that they were from Russia, but I wanted to find out more about them. I got in touch with Whale Alert, an organisation that monitors and analyses crypto scams. Frank is one of their experts. He doesn't want us to use his surname.
These are not very bright criminals.
Frank found out that the scammers had made $25,000, and he says the true figure will be much higher. He also found something intriguing.
Why would anybody from Russia transfer to an Indian exchange to trade for rupees? That doesn't really make much sense. So my guess is that these scammers are not from Russia, but they're from India. There's a really big scam market in India. It's a really organized form of crime over there. I wouldn't be surprised if this is part of that organized crime as well.
These kinds of scams are partly why the Indian government is looking to ban cryptocurrencies. Chiranjeevi thinks that would be a good thing.
I still question myself, you know, like, how did I fall into this guy's trap? What I learned from this entire episode was a person like me who's working in the IT sector can get scammed so easily. I feel sorry for other people who can easily fall in trap of such guys.
That's James Clayton reporting there. Finally, 277-year-old auction house Sotheby's said it recorded record sales this year. It credited, quote, an influx of younger tech-savvy collectors who favored luxury goods and non-fungible tokens. Those are digital assets stored on the blockchain. Sotheby's said that the source code for the World Wide Web was the first digital artifact it offered, and it sold for $5.3 million. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.